Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, February 6, 2018. Hundreds of youth take part in a pro-government protest in the streets of Juba.
We are demanding the government of the United States of America to review this decision because, as people of South Sudan, we are ready to tell America that what you did cannot help in achieving peace in the Republic of South Sudan.
An angry youth beat a foreign journalist in Juba.
Certainly, I started sharing the youth shouting, Kawaja, 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 Kawaja. So when I turned, I saw they were beating someone. Then one young man came to me, ran and said, they are beating your colleague, a fellow journalist is being beaten. You go and rescue her.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Hundreds of pro-government youth turned out in the streets of Juba today to protest against the United States arms restriction announced last week. Traditional chiefs mobilized people to turn up for the demonstrations by announcing it Monday night on a megaphone mounted on a vehicle that traveled throughout the streets of Juba, asking residents to turn up for the pro-government demonstration. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Hundreds of youth, women and chiefs gathered in front of the gated entrance to the UN mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, to take part in the pro-government demonstration against the U.S. arms restrictions. The protest was led by the South Sudan Council of Chiefs. Chief Tabana Luka read aloud from the petition as it was delivered to the U.S. Embassy.
The decision, unilateral decision by the United States of America, by restricting arms to the government of the Republic of South Sudan, to us as chiefs, we're saying it is a tactics of weakening the government so that the enemies of this country, even if internally or externally, they will find the government is weak so that they will overthrow the government.
The demonstrators marched from Dr. John Garang Mausoleum to the U.S. Embassy and then on to the UNMISS office in Tomping. They carried banners criticizing the U.S. decision to sanction the South Sudan government for continuing to buy weapons. Some read no arms embargo on South Sudan and no for colonization. The Trump administration announced its unilateral arms restrictions on South Sudan on Friday to pressure the South Sudan government to cease hostilities and end a conflict that has left hundreds of thousands of people dead and displaced more than 4 million people, 2 million inside South Sudan and 2 million others as refugees in neighboring countries. Juba immediately recalled its ambassador to the U.S. on Friday after the arms restrictions were announced. The chiefs admit the war continues in South Sudan but condemn the restricted arms sales, saying it threatens the sovereignty of the country.
We are demanding the government of the United States of America to review this decision because, as people of South Sudan, we are ready to tell America that what you did cannot help in achieving peace in the Republic of South Sudan.
Scores of demonstrators appeared angry as they gathered at the UNMISS gate. Some threw stones at the office structures. Chir Marow, one of the chiefs at the demonstration, says South Sudan is an independent country that has the right to buy any arms it wants.
Kalam de Masa, UNMISS Sudan de Dola.
This thing is not right. South Sudan is a country. And there's no way another country can come and give orders for South Sudan. This is the reason why we as the youth, chiefs and women came out to protest.
Today's protest is an exception to the rule in South Sudan. In December, women leaders were questioned by national security agents for organizing a march for peace. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
At least two journalists were beaten by an angry mob taking part in the anti-US protest today. One Western journalist was badly beaten, as we hear from Nabil Biajo for VOA in Juba.
Eyewitnesses say the protests, which happened outside the UNMISS compound near Juba International Airport, mostly involve youth who seem to be venting their anger at foreign nationals. An international journalist who declined to provide her identity or have her voice recorded told South Sudan in Focus that the angry youth hit her repeatedly in the face, tried to strangle her, and wrestled her to the ground. She sustained bruises on her arms, neck, and face, which were covered in red marks from the beating. The journalist says after she was beaten, one youth tried to rescue her by falling over her so that the mob would stop beating her. She says that young man probably saved her life. A South Sudanese journalist with Bakhita Radio was also at the scene and got roughed up by the mob. But reporter Gale Julia says the protest started out peacefully.
Though the protesters were chanting anti-US slogans, they were peaceful, they were not harassing people who were passing by the road, they were not even harassing us, the journalists. When we reached to the UN gate, that is UNMISS gate at Tomping, the protest leaders prepared to give their remarks and submit their petition to the UN mission.
Julia says things turned violent when a member of the South Sudan Youth Union started reading a petition aloud outside the UNMISS gate.
The youth started throwing stones on the roof of the said, which is at the gate of UNMISS. Then, subtly, I started hearing the youth shouting, "Kawaja, Kawaja, Kawaja, Kawaja." So when I turned, I saw they were beating someone. Then one young man came to me. Ran and said, they are beating your colleague, a fellow journalist is being beaten. You go and rescue her. As I was, I tried going also there. I ran that side. All of a sudden, someone just came from nowhere, hit me with a blow. Luckily, I did not fall down. Then he shouted, "Bring your camera, bring." One was pulling my phone. Then I realized there was something going on. I pushed the one guy. He fell down. I ran back.
Julius says he witnessed the foreign journalists getting badly beaten by the mob.
I was standing far, but I was seeing actually the beating went on at least from 3 to 5 minutes. That is my own assessment of what before the police could reach and rescue the lady. Otherwise, I really got scared because the youth were many, more than 20 people in a cycle shouting, and they were hitting the lady who was lying down.
Julius says he believes today's violence was not an attack on journalists. He says the foreign journalist was beaten because she was white and perceived to be American. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biadro in Juba.
On this International Day of Zero Tolerance for Female Genital Mutilation, the United Nations is calling for the eradication of the traditional practice, which causes extreme physical and psychological harm to millions of women and girls around the world. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The United Nations says more than 200 million girls and women in 30 countries are currently living with the harmful and dangerous consequences of female genital mutilation. Young girls between infancy and 15 years of age are subjected to the practice, which mainly occurs in Africa, the Middle East, and Asia. The World Health Organization reports FGM confers no benefits, only serious problems, including severe bleeding, infections, complications in childbirth, and increased risk of newborn deaths. Irrefutable evidence exists regarding the many serious lifelong health consequences that arise from the procedure. Nevertheless, the WHO reports the practice persists because of myths and misconceptions. WHO spokeswoman Fadela Shaib says one dangerous myth is that only girls who undergo the procedure can enter womanhood and be considered respectable. She says people often believe there is little risk of harm for girls and women if female genital mutilation is performed by a doctor or other healthcare professional.
This is not the truth. WHO is completely against any health worker helping to do this practice. FGM is a harmful practice and may lead to physical, mental, and sexual health complications regardless of who performs it.
FGM is far from being eradicated, but Shahid tells VOA slow progress is being made in communities around the world. She cites the case of Sudan, a country that has a high level of FGM. With the help of several UN agencies and financing from Britain and Ireland, she says the practice is becoming more rare in communities across the country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Israel is taking steps to deport thousands of African immigrants. Robert Berger reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Some 40,000 African migrants are facing an uncertain future after Israel began issuing deportation orders that amount to an ultimatum. The migrants can take an offer of $3,500 and a one-way plane ticket to Rwanda within 60 days or face imprisonment. Most of the migrants came from war-torn Sudan and Eritrea over the past decade and entered Israel illegally. Many say that going back to Africa is not an option, so they will choose the lesser of the two evils.
I
will go to prison in Israel, said Katir Abdullah, who came from Darfur. He said Rwanda is not his country, and the only things waiting for him there are persecution, unemployment, and poverty. Israel is sending the migrants to Rwanda after assessing it as a safe country with a growing economy. Rwanda denies Israeli claims that it has agreed to take the migrants in. Adam Ahmed, who is from Sudan, says paying people to leave is a betrayal.
Now it is so sad that Israeli people, they put African people or African asylum seekers for sale, and that's so sad.
Israel refuses to grant the Africans asylum, saying that they are economic migrants and not refugees. Officials say Israel was created as a refuge for the Jewish people and not for the masses fleeing poverty in Africa. Interior Minister Aryeh Deri said Israel's first obligation is to its own people. He described the Africans as infiltrators who have brought crime and misery to the streets of South Tel Aviv. But human rights activists here say Israel should be the first to assist the Africans because the country was built by Jewish refugees fleeing the Holocaust. Colette Avital heads the Center of Organizations of Holocaust Survivors in Israel. We have always asserted that the world was silent during World War II, said Avital. She warned that Israel must not be silent and must lend a helping hand to those in need. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at a separatist group in Cameroon. That story is coming up next.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's core value do you live by?
I do value my education a lot because I know that with education I can go anywhere. I can explore the world. I can be whoever I want to be. I can go anywhere. I can do anything I want in life.
I live by the hard working as the core value and prioritizing the priorities. I like it just because when I live in hard working, I know for sure one day I might achieve something which I need in life.
It's respect. I love to be respected and I love to respect other people.
Okay, trust. So I love someone I can trust. So I want someone to trust me, because that's the way to go. Because if you don't trust someone, then there's nothing, there's no way you can go forward with it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. Hundreds of people are fleeing English-speaking towns following clashes between the military and gunmen believed to be armed separatists in Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the French-speaking town of Buda, where some of the English speakers are escaping to.
A dozen vehicles transporting at least 220 people from Cameroon's English-speaking northwest region arrived in the French-speaking town of Buda Tuesday morning. Among them is Donatien Fotsu, a 55-year-old businessman. He says he, his wife and four children fled from the town of Bamenda after three consecutive days of heavy gunfire between the military and armed separatists.
The army people and cause all that problem. They just do as they like.
He says Cameroon military has been invading their neighborhoods, shooting indiscriminately and arresting and torturing citizens. He says the torture and the killing inflicted on them has made the people so frightened that when they see a military vehicle, they start escaping. Christopher Maingong, a 27-year-old farmer, says he left his village on the outskirts of Njinikom before the deadline because he had anticipated there would be bloody conflicts triggered by the heavy deployment of Cameroon's military to English-speaking towns and villages.
I was afraid. I did not know what was really the problem. Since we have military that they cannot communicate, the next day, you have tell us what's happening, the gunshot was this, was that. So even today, I'm afraid. I don't know what's going wrong.
The tensions began mounting when Cameroon announced that separatist leader Ayuk Tabe Julius and 36 of his supporters had been arrested in Nigeria and transferred to Cameroon. They have not been seen in public since then, fueling speculation that they may have been killed. Cameroon government spokesperson Issa Chiruma said in a statement that all 37 are still alive, but the announcement did not calm their angry supporters. Cameroon says seven villages have been burned and at least 20 people, including soldiers and separatists, have been killed in the ongoing violence. The unrest in Cameroon began in November 2016 when English-speaking teachers and lawyers in the northwest and southwest regions, frustrated with having to work in French, took to the streets, calling for reforms and greater autonomy. The situation degenerated with separatist calls for independence and the rise of an armed separatist movement, prompting a crackdown of the military. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Buda, Western Cameroon.
A new report by the Human Rights Watch says both government and rebels are continuing to recruit and use child soldiers despite promises to end the practice. Ayendeng Bior has more from Washington.
The Human Rights Watch interviewed over a dozen former and current child soldiers in former Unity and Western Equatoria State in November. In audio provided by HRW, researcher Jahan Henry says they found patterns of child recruitment into armed conflict has continued despite promises to stop.
The patterns of recruitment that we documented in 2015 have continued clearly, and we've found that many of the same commanders are still doing it, and new commanders are doing it too. And it shows the cost of inaction.
In interviews conducted in late 2017, former child soldiers confirmed that recruitment has continued over the past 2 years under the lead of Lieutenant General Matthew Poljung of the SPLA. Other child soldiers told HRW they were recruited by Peter Gadet and Gabriel Gatwich Chun, who the report says is a veteran commander loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar. There is also credible evidence that commanders loyal to First Vice President Taban Dengai recruited child soldiers in July 2016. HRW's 2015 report documented a pattern of child recruitment across the country and found that the use of child soldiers was systematic across South Sudan. It named 15 commanders and officials from both the government and the SPLA in opposition who have used child soldiers. On this last trip, Henry says some of the commanders who forcibly recruited children and implicated in the 2015 report had not ended the practice.
The leaders of South Sudan have time and again promised to stop the use and recruitment of child soldiers. But what we have found over and over again in the last several years is that they continue to do so. So commanders both on the government side and on the opposition side have continued to recruit by force children and to use them in fighting.
International actors should impose sanctions on the individual commanders who continue to use child soldiers in their forces, according to Henry. A 2017 report by the United Nations verified 169 incidents of child recruitment and use of child soldiers, which it said affected at least 1,022 children. The UN said 61% of those incidents were attributed to the SPLA and other government security forces. Last month, CITISAM reported the use and recruitment of child soldiers by forces loyal to the government, to Taban Dengai and Riek Machar. Henry says the child soldiers that she spoke to all wanted to experience a normal childhood.
The boys all talked about horrible experiences while being in the forces. They all experienced traumas of various kinds, and all of them, without exception, said that they wanted to be in school and that they missed school.
South Sudan's leaders have failed to investigate and prosecute the use of child soldiers, according to the report, and Henry says that is a trend that must end. Ayan Dengbior for VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Hundreds of citizens took part in a protest against the United States arms restrictions, which were announced last week on the South Sudan government. Traditional chiefs mobilized people to turn out for the demonstration by announcing it last night on a megaphone mounted atop a vehicle moving through the streets of Juba. They called on residents to turn up for today's demonstration. Scores of youth, women, and chiefs gathered in front of the gated entrance to UNMISS to take part in the pro-government protest against the U.S. arms restrictions. Protesters also presented a petition calling on the U.S. government to rescind those restrictions. The protest was led by the South Sudan Council of Chiefs. Chief Taban Luka says the arms restrictions weaken the government so that the enemy will find that weakness and eventually overthrow the government. The demonstrators marched from Dr. John Garang Mausoleum to the U.S. Embassy and then on to the UNMISS office in Tumping. They carried banners criticizing the U.S. decision to sanction the South Sudan government for continuing to buy weapons. Some read, "No arms embargo on South Sudan" and "No for colonization." The Trump administration announced its unilateral arms restrictions on South Sudan last Friday to pressure the South Sudan government to cease hostilities and end a conflict that has left hundreds of thousands of people dead and displaced more than 4 million people, 2 million inside South Sudan and 2 million others as refugees in neighboring countries. At least two journalists were beaten by an angry mob taking part in that protest. One Western journalist was badly beaten. Eyewitnesses say the protest mostly involved youth who seemed to be venting their anger at foreign nationals. An international journalist who declined to provide her identity or have her voice recorded told this program that angry youths hit her repeatedly in the face, tried to even strangle her, and wrestled her to the ground. She sustained bruises on her arms, neck, and face, which were covered in red marks. The journalist says after she was beaten, one youth tried to rescue her by falling on top of her so that the mob would stop beating her. She says that young man probably saved her life. A South Sudanese journalist with Bakita Radio was also at the scene and got roughed up by the angry mob. And finally, a new report by the Human Rights Watch, or HRW, is accusing both government and rebel forces of continuing to recruit and use child soldiers in South Sudan, despite promises to end that practice. Human Rights Watch interviewed over a dozen former and current child soldiers in former Unity and Western Equatoria State back in November. In audio provided by HRW, researcher Jahan Henry says they found patterns of child recruitment into armed conflict, and it has continued despite the promises to stop by both warring parties. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Juba Alish by Brema. We have been listening to Brema with the song Jubalish. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Would like to know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. كتبوا اسم البلد عزبتوا المجيد في أرضنا جوب العيس جوب الحنان وجوب العيس وجوب الحنان وجوب العيس وجوب الحنان العيد.
سجوب الحنان.